There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could
Good sing, afternoon, and welcome to the first episode of the Dr. Regine Show, sponsored by the Teen Insight Hour. It is Monday afternoon, 2 p.m., and you are listening to KHTS FM 98.1. AM 1220 and hometownstation.com. I am Dr. Regine, your host today, taking over the Teen Insight Hour. I am psychologist, children's author, and mental health advocate in the Los Angeles area. Today, I have a very special guest, Robert Mack. He is an Ivy League educated positive psychology expert, celebrity happiness coach, and best-selling author of Love from the Inside Out and Happiness from the Inside Out. His work has been endorsed by Oprah, Vanessa Williams, and many more. We are so excited to have you. Welcome, Rob, to the show.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much. It's so great to connect.
Yes, so we are so excited to have you on today to talk about all about self-love, how to help our teens to feel happier, just advice that you have for parents, for caregivers, especially in a really dire time right now where kids really need to hear and parents on how to support their teens, all about mental health, which is an area that you are so a huge expert on, and featuring also your book called Love from the Inside Out.
Yes. I'm only an expert because I've suffered for so long with so many challenges of my own, you know, and happiness and depression and suicidal ideation for a long time, particularly during my teenage years.
Yeah, so isn't it the best thing when you actually have a lot of that experience and you can actually share it? So I think it is the best experience, and I'm so grateful to have you on. So I was thinking, let's start first talking about, you know, the premise of your book and really what is self-love? Because we hear so much about self-love, but we really don't really understand what it means. So really would love to get your insight on that and how you feel it's important for our teens and parents growing up.
Most of us live our lives as though we're all under the same understanding about what love is. And the way I define love is love is felt oneness with life itself. And so maybe it's felt oneness with somebody else. But when we're talking about self-love, it's felt oneness with yourself. There's a sense of alignment with yourself. And I would say that all of us, interestingly enough, do love ourselves, and we love ourselves a great deal, but it's not always conscious or intelligent self-love, right? So when we eat too many potato chips, or we don't exercise, or we're seemingly mean to ourselves, we often do that with an intention or an unconscious effort to actually get some kind of reward out of it. And so it really is, in some ways, self-love, but the kind of self-love we're talking about here is sort of a intentional, intelligent, and wise way of feeling peace and love and happiness. So instead of routing what you feel, particularly peace, love, and happiness, through other people, places, or things, we, and I am encouraging folks to go directly to the source for it, so directly within yourself. So that's one way of talking about self-love. The other way of talking about it, maybe in a more simple way, is that self-love is really just focusing on the best within yourself. And so that doesn't mean that you can't make changes or make improvements in your life or to yourself, but it means that you're setting an intention to see and focus on and think about and talk about the best within your body, within your mind, within your life, and within your world, knowing that if you can do that consistently enough, you'll feel better. And then when you feel better, based on lots of scientific evidence and empirical data, we know that you'll do better as well. Your life will go better. So there are lots of ways to talk about self-love, but those are just two of them.
Yeah, I love that. You know, just a thought that comes to my mind, you know, I'm a mom of three. And I can just imagine, you know, and also as a parenting expert, working with a lot of parents, I can imagine a parent saying, well, how do I teach my kid self-love? Or if anyone's listening and they're working, let's say, with teens, how do we teach teens? I mean, because I really think that self-love comes from also our environment and what we see in parents role modeling that behavior. What are some tips that you would have for whether you had a teen with you or a parent asking you that question, is like, how do I teach my kid what really is self-love? What is like one top thing that comes to your mind?
Well, you certainly want to be the change that you want to see in your son or your daughter or your child. We can show people and we can show our teenagers much better than we can tell them. And so you want to be a living, shining example of what it means to be self-loving, what it means to be self-compassionate, what it means to be non-judgmental towards yourself and others. And so if you can live out your highest sort of version of that consistently because you love feeling good and because you love other people feeling good, you'll be surprised that it will become contagious. We know that emotions are contagious. There's something called emotional contagion. But we also know that, you know, most people, particularly our children, learn best through living, shining examples rather than just words. Words often fall on deaf ears.
Yeah. You know, there's a part in your book, a section, a sentence that I really love, and I just want to share it because I just wanted to get some insight from you on this as well. Is you say that real love starts with self-love, and then when you love yourself, you love others without effort. And when you love yourself, you love other people without trying. I think one thing that really stood out for me is if a person is full of self-love and if they really love themselves, that they can love you back automatically. How would you explain that to a, for example, to a teen or to a child or to a parent in terms of what is one thing you can kind of change this week even about yourself to love yourself a little more? Like, what is the first example that comes to your mind?
Well, I know as a teenager and young adult, when I was really struggling with self-love, I mean, I think I was one of the most self-hating, self-loathing teenagers I've ever met. And I initially started by trying to focus on loving things about myself that I didn't love. And I didn't love very much, if anything, about myself. But I would try to focus on the things that were hard or seemed unlovable. So, you know, I didn't like the way I walked and the way I talked and the way I dressed and the way I looked. I didn't like any of that. And I started there, and that was not quite the right place to start. Instead, as I got a little wiser and I started learning more about self-love, I discovered the benefit of focusing on the one or two things about yourself that you appreciate most easily or effortlessly. So the one or two things that you can enjoy or love or that you feel proud about within yourself that takes very little time, energy, and effort. For me, it was just that I was making the effort. So every day, I would keep a self-love journal, and in that self-love journal, I would bullet out one or two or three things that I loved about myself. For the first week or two, it was the same thing over and over, which was simply, I do genuinely care about people, and I do genuinely want to feel more happiness and more peace, and I'm trying. That was it. And then I realized that by taking my eyes off of what was seemingly so unlovable about myself and also about others, and focusing on the things that were more easily and effortlessly lovable about myself, my self-love began to grow. And then when I look back at the things or the aspects or the traits or the qualities about myself that I always thought were so unlovable, even those things became more lovable. At least they were likable at first, and then as time went on, they become perfectly lovable. So it's sort of a miracle of miracles that if you can take your eye off the things about yourself that you hate the most or that you're feeling the most judgmental around and focus on the things that you most easily and effortlessly feel love around, that love will grow. And as you look back towards those things about yourself that you didn't love at all before, you begin to love those. But then you also find that that love begins to spread to the world. And so you look at people that you thought were unlovable, and even they seem a lot more lovable, a lot easier to get along with. So that's sort of the magic that happens when you focus on the most easily and effortlessly lovable things about yourself.
And it's so true. Yes, you make such a good point, because it kind of puts us back to the place that kindness and compassion is contagious. And if someone at school, you know, teens go through a lot of this, from bullying to body image issues. And if someone's gossiping about you, right? So it comes back to, you know, don't, you know, replicate the same type of behavior. Do something different. Be kind. And you will see how, in turn, you will receive that positivity back. And that brings us into our next question. The golden question is, how can we really help our teens feel happier? And I think right now we're really struggling around the nation with mental health, teen issues. I'm sure you've seen on the news the fentanyl overdoses and a lot of the things that kids are dabbing into and struggling with right now. And I think it's such a hard place for them to, get focused on the happy things. So what is it as an advice that you have also stemming from your book in terms of helping them feel happier?
Yeah, great question. So again, I'll sort of reiterate what I said earlier, because I think it's really important and profound. It's a great starting place, which is really to be the happiness yourself that you want to see within your child or within anybody in your life. You know, it's easy to talk a hot game, but we really want to be able to walk our talk. We really want to be able to live that our highest understanding out with respect to peace or love or self-love or happiness. And so that's number one. Like, if your child isn't happy and you're not happy, you can't really help them. It's like they're drowning and you're drowning. You can't really help them if you're both drowning. So you've got to find a way to sort of be beyond sort of needing help around your happiness, which means you've got to find a way to grow or increase or enhance your experience of happiness and to live that out as consistently as humanly possible, and know and trust that that happy, those happy feelings and emotions will become contagious, and your kids and other people in the world will pick up on it. So that's number one. Number two is, when you're having conversations, you know, with your children or your teenagers or anybody else in the world, you want to do what you can to sort of lean in to a more positive or constructive way of talking about whatever it is that you're talking about. And so lots of us focus on things or reiterate things, repeat things, only because they're true. It's like, these bad things are happening in the world or happening within my life or happening within your life, you know, beautiful child of mine, and we should focus on it and talk about it and think about it and reiterate it and pre-live it and relive it 1,000 times because it's true. And that's understandable and justified. The only problem is that only deepens our pain, it makes our pain more painful, and increases our suffering. And it doesn't really put us in the best or most creative and problem-solving place. It doesn't put us in the best mindset to actually solve for those problems or to make improvements in our life. So instead of that, we want to begin to learn and practice telling a truthful but better than the story about ourselves and our lives and our children and their lives. And we want to do it in a way that's constructive. So, for instance, we can talk about, you know, let's say it's raining outside. One way of talking about it is that it's a really bad day. Well, that's true. Maybe you're experiencing it as a bad day. But there's a much more constructive way of talking about that rainy day that sounds like, gosh, I sure love when it's sunny outside. And it's the rainy days that make me appreciate the sunny days so much more. And today I'm going to rest so that I have all this energy for tomorrow so that I can enjoy the sunny day when, you know, the clouds part and the sun shines through again. And so you just want to begin telling a better funny story based in truth about your own life and this world and your kids. And you want to do it simply to feel better. And if you can do it simply to feel better, I promise you're going to find yourself thinking more effectively, solving problems more quickly and easily. And you'll see that other people in your life begin to pick up on that as well. And those other people will include, you know, your teenagers and, you know, the other people you love. And even people that you don't love, they'll be inspired to taking similar action just based on the sort of living, shining example that you're setting.
Yes, and I think that the role modeling is absolutely an important part. A lot of the times I get parents who will feel, my child doesn't want to talk to me or my teen doesn't want to talk to me. I keep on checking in, but they constantly push me back. And going back to what you're saying, it is about really empowering parents to not give up on talking to their kids, right? So just giving them also that space and not being reactive to what they're bringing to the table. What do you feel about that?
Gosh, so good. So good, Dr. Regine. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I would say the challenge and opportunity with, first of all, living and being a shining example of happiness or peace or of self-love, and the challenge and opportunity with telling a better feeling story based in truth about your life and the world and your teenager's life, is that there's sort of an in-between sort of phase or sort of practice that you want to begin to lean into, which is simply just listening, right? Just listening in an active way where you're fully, deeply present, which means you're unitasking, not multitasking, where your mind is where your body is, right? So if and when really you go about your day at all, you want to try and unitask as much as possible. But particularly when you're in a conversation with your teenager, I mean, with a loved one, with anyone, you want to try to keep in your mind where your body is. That's the way the actor Vince Vaughn describes being present. But you want to go level beyond that if you can, which is keep your mind quiet while you're listening to your teenager share. And if you can do that, you've sort of mastered at least 60 to 70% of the game. And then the next part of it is just maintaining non-judgment. So it's sort of non-judgmental awareness of what your teenager is sharing with you or not sharing with you. And you're wanting to then reflect back what you heard in your own words without judgment, right? So it's unconditional regard. And then you're wanting to simply validate, normalize, and empathize, no matter what it is they share. Even if it's something, especially something that you deeply and totally disagree with, you're just reflecting back to them what you heard them say, even if it's just a few words. If you can do that without any expectation of reciprocity, without any judgment, without too much of a desire or intention to change them or to fix them or to solve their problems for them, but you just do it in order to be this loving, present person in their lives, you'd be surprised that with that freedom and space, they'll be invited into a conversation that might at some point deepen or become richer, and they might become more vulnerable or confidently vulnerable, and you'll find that you might begin to experience more self-disclosure. But the challenge and the opportunity there is that somewhere on the inside, you want to try to maintain your peaceful, centered presence in such a way that you're not moved or shaken too much by their lack of receptivity, their inability or unwillingness to share with you or to talk with you. You've got to somehow maintain your own peace and your own happiness or joy, at least your own knowing that everything is okay. Even if it doesn't look okay right now, I have to know somewhere deep inside, everything is still okay. If you can do that, you'd be surprised because, you know, kids, just like adults, are often more moved by what we mean and what we feel than what we say.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also they really look up to us in terms of how we behave and our behaviors. And that goes back to the role modeling we were talking about. And I love that. And it's, I talk about that a lot, is all about validation and, you know, not exposing judgment. I think when they feel judged is when they can't feel that they can be truthful or honest. And I think that's when lying starts. And the lying usually is because they don't feel, either they don't feel safe or they don't, or they're fearful of what the reaction of the parent will be. So really focusing and practicing that. I do encourage parents to maybe take on that challenge this week and practice that. And I also feel it's not just parents and kids, but also adults as well, right? In adult relationships, it's the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, what you do anywhere is what you do everywhere, so to speak, right? So you might see it play out more intensely in a parent-child relationship, but it's probably also playing out in adult relationships or, you know, at work or at other places in your life. And so you want to practice these principles really everywhere. Then you get really good at them really quickly, and then you don't have to turn the switch off and on just for your child. So that's an important thing to remember. The other thing you said, which I think is just so profound, and it's why I love conversations with you so much, is that, you know, at the end of the day, it really is about unconditional love. Mm-hmm. So there could be consequences, right? And there should be consequences. If your child doesn't do X, then maybe Y happens. But you want to be able to deliver those consequences or have an understanding that those consequences are consistently delivered. And just because they fail to do X, and so therefore, you know, are experiencing Y, the phone's been taken away, they can't go out on a Saturday night, whatever it happens to be, you don't want them to feel that the love is being taken away at the same time. So there's an opportunity here to still express and embody unconditional love while you still have causes and effects or causes and consequences for behavior. And so that way children learn not conditional love, but they learn unconditional love, or as close as we can sort of get to it as human beings. And they don't end up later sort of needing or wanting to perform for love.
So, you know, so sorry, Rob, a lot of it is adults. We have to go into a break, a little break.
Okay.
So you are listening to KHTS FM 98.1 AM 1220 and hometownstation.com. We will be back in a moment. Back to the Dr. Regine Show on the Teen Insight Hour. I have a great guest, Robert Mack, on, and we are here talking about self-love, how to help our teens feel happier, parenting tips, and much more. So welcome back, Rob.
Thanks for having me back.
So we were briefly discussing earlier the importance of just touching upon a lot of the things that teens are going through right now and parents struggling. with their teens, anywhere from body image to bullying, and how that ties into the love component. I love what we talked about earlier. We were talking about unconditional love and the importance of self-love, and parents needing to validate their kids, listening without judgment. We touch upon amazing things. Now we're bridging body image, which is so big for, you know, boys and girls and a lot of things that they're struggling with, loving themselves. What are some kind of like tips and tools that you can recommend for parents also, or, you know, to support them in this process to help their teens?
Yeah, I think a few things. I think, one, sometimes it's great to have a conversation about why we even want to feel great about our bodies. It seems so obvious. You know, everybody wants to feel great about their bodies. But the truth is, most of us want to be attractive to other people, right? And most of us also just want to feel good in general. So if you can kind of get clear on that and kind of come to some kind of agreement around that, that ultimately we're all after happiness, or we're all after a feeling of confidence, or we're all wanting to feel attractive, then you have a lot more options available and at your disposal. So for instance, then we can have a conversation where it's like, let's identify all of our happiness islands and happiness deserts, or our self-love islands and self-love deserts. And those islands, essentially, are just people, places, things, and activities that allow you to feel happy, or in this case, loved, or feel self-love, with very little time, energy, and effort. So you just identify those things. It's like, maybe you feel most self-loving, or most lovable, or most loved, when you're out in nature, when you're by yourself, when you're reading a book, when you're with certain friends. Identify those things, and we'll call those happiness islands or self-love islands. And then identify the opposite of those. We can almost call these self-love triggers or happiness triggers, but they're people, places, things, and activities that make it hard for us to feel happiness or self-love. They actually make it really easy almost to feel self-hate or self-loathing or to feel unhappiness. And so we want to do what we can to sort of stay off of the desert, to stay away from those people, places, things, and activities that trigger our self-hate and our self-loathing and our unhappiness, and stay on the happiness islands and self-love islands that make it easy for us to feel happiness and self-love. And so just doing that is extraordinarily helpful. Now, of course, at some point you graduate beyond that, because the ultimate lesson for all of us is that nobody and nothing can make us feel anything. We have a role to play in that, right? They can influence us or encourage us in certain directions, but the place where the rubber hits the road is the story that we tell around all of these things, that we tell around our body, that we tell around other people's bodies, and that we tell around the world in our lives. And so we do a lot of meaning-making and storytelling in our heads, but we're often unconscious of it. So there are sort of multiple steps to get there, but one of the best places to get there is clarifying what you're optimizing a positive self-body image for, and then identifying your happiness or self-love islands and deserts, and then going further than that and beginning to work on telling a truthful but better-feeling story about your body, about your life in general.
Yes, and I think as you broach this area, I love the island idea. That is so cool, because you can separate a lot of those areas. One thing that comes to my mind, Rob, as you were talking about that, is how teens tend to, tweens and teens, you know, tend to, just like adults do, right? There's no difference. But I really believe that a lot of this trauma or whatever a person is experiencing as an adult has a child root. A lot of the times people will say that trauma in itself is, oh, you've something, you know, negative has impacted your life, which is true, but it's usually a trigger that has occurred in your life that is a memory that has stuck on you like an imprint. I'm remembering the duckling imprints, and we each have our duckling imprints. And I go back to what teens often do is they often compare themselves to the other person. It's kind of like when we say the grass is really not greener on the other side, but it's really about helping them stay on track and staying in their own self-love in terms of who they are within themselves, which is so hard because it's a time that they're developing. But what about those kids, which I want to say a large percentage of teens do this, where they're comparing themselves, comparing their family lives, comparing clothes or things or grades or all this is where all the competitive stuff comes in, where they don't feel valued enough, which you and I know is definitely from a place of a lack of loving themselves. How do we broach that conversation with them? Because I feel like a lot of our listeners and parents, caregivers, teachers, whoever is listening today will connect with that and have certainly heard this from their teens, whether it's through negative behavior or any type of other situation that may arise.
Yeah, I'm guiding folks and kids back to their own emotional guidance system, I think it's very useful. I think it's super tempting, and it's easy to understand how we all, including teenagers and kids in general, fall into the trap of like seeking external validation, right? Versus seeking self-validation, wanting to be validated themselves or seeking internal validation. So that, of course, is understandable and justified and legitimate. And I think it's helpful to remember, too, that the only reason we want to really achieve, accomplish, or acquire, or experience anything is because we're ultimately just wanting to feel good, right? And we've kind of got this, like, cart before the horse experience going on, where we all seek, let's say, to improve our bodies so we can feel better, make more money so we can feel better, have our kids feel better so that we can feel better. But if we could turn that around and help our kids turn that around so they could see that what they're really ultimately after is feeling better, and then if they could feel better, they'll find everything improving so much more easily, effortlessly, and enjoyably than they're accustomed to, right? So without all the effort and the time and energy that they're accustomed to investing and spending on improving themselves, they'll find they can spend on enjoying themselves, so to speak, and they'll find that improvements follow quickly and closely behind, right? So this is the value and power of positive psychology, for instance, right? It's a 20-year-old science that really focuses on the ways in which you can improve or enhance or deepen the happiness in your life or success in your life by focusing on happiness, right? So if you focus on happiness and enjoying your body, enjoying yourself, and focusing on the best within yourself and other people, interestingly enough, you start to not only feel better, but you, of course, you start to do better. Life starts to go better. And then you start making changes from a different place. You know, often we prioritize self-improvement over self, say, enjoyment. And that's understandable. As parents, we want our kids to do well. We want them to go out in the world and to succeed and to flourish. But most kids are extraordinarily stressed out and anxious and self-loathing, and so many of them are depressed and lonely. And when we continue to emphasize the importance, let's say, of results as opposed to focusing on the process of the journey, and we make it seem like the only way to get the results is to go through a whole lot of pain, we actually often demotivate our kids or disincentivize them, and we force them to take a long path, a long route to getting what they will ultimately want, which is just a feeling or experience of peace, love, and happiness. And so, you know, encouraging them, reminding them that ultimately what they're after is peace and love and happiness, and that there's an easier, lazier, smarter approach to getting not only the happiness, but the success they want, that in of itself, I think, is extraordinarily powerful, you know, conversation to have.
Yeah, so really focusing on the positive affirmations. I do have these positive affirmations. I'm sure you've seen them, where it's just saying positive things about yourself, which is so helpful. You know, this reminds me of when we wake up in the morning and we say to ourselves, I'm going to have a bad day. Like, it's raining outside. I'm just thinking about that. We talked about that earlier. And if you say it's going to be a bad day, it is going to be a bad day because you've already put that out there. You've put that out there in your mind. However, if you really shift the mindset and say, you know, I'm not feeling too great today, but I am going to knock it out today. I'm going to have a great day today. So one thing I really love is I call it the grateful jar, and having a jar. And this is so great for parents to kind of help their teens and teach them this. Even as adults, it's really great to just put little sticky notes in there and write one good thing that you really love about yourself. It could be anything, or one thing you're just grateful for. It could be having food on the table, a roof over your head. It could be having that one friend who listens to you, because I think a lot of times teens tend to go into this spiral, into this space of nothing's great, everything is awful. It's like the all or nothing thinking. And they always think that most of the time that everything is going to be permanent. Nothing will change. But we do know that things do change, you know, from one day to the next. And so really having them practice that. How do you like that as an exercise? And anything else like you feel we could add to that?
I love it so much. I mean, and it has to be authentic, right? So when I was 16 or 17 years old, and then through my early 20s, you know, I was depressed and I experienced suicidal ideation. I even had a suicidal experience. And part of the reason and the challenge, you know, that I experienced during that period was that I felt like I had a really good life and I didn't have a whole lot to complain about objectively. But subjectively, on the inside, I felt horrible for it. So in other words, I felt I should be grateful, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't feel grateful for it. And then that just made my pain more painful. It just added guilt on top of my lack of gratitude. So I felt awful. So I realized in that experience that I had to start with the authentic things. So sometimes we judge ourselves for what we express gratitude or appreciation around. So for instance, even though I had running water and I had a healthy functioning body, I wasn't genuinely grateful for either one. I had never really gone without water, and I had never had any other body but my own. And I saw all these other bodies out there in the world that seemed so much more beautiful or stronger or more athletic. And so I realized that starting there was not the answer for me. Instead, I could feel gratitude and appreciation for, like, sometimes a sunny day, for music, certainly for seeing a beautiful girl. When I was, like, 16 or 17, I always felt gratitude and appreciation for that. So I noticed that if I could be sort of non-judgmental about that and start where I felt authentic gratitude, no matter how sort of primitive or seemingly childish or elementary, that was a great place to get started. But sometimes you can't even do that, to your point. And so in those cases, I was much better off just distracting myself or having somebody else distract me from the topic or theme altogether. So if I couldn't find a way to focus on any particular theme or topic in a way that made me feel better, I found that focusing on any other topic, theme, or subject area that made me feel better was the better answer, right? So sometimes when you're really stuck in the mud, you can't, doesn't matter how hard you push the gas, you're just going to dig yourself further and deeper into the mud. You've got to take your foot off the gas, maybe put the car in neutral for a second, get a tow truck to pull you out. So that's what distraction does. It's sort of a pattern interrupt. And when you're really struggling and you can't find anything to feel authentic gratitude around, you're better off distracting yourself from whatever it is that's making you feel bad, and then returning to that subject or theme or topic later when your mood rises on its own.
Yes, and I think those are all such amazing tips, Rob. I love that. Tell me, because as you were talking, I was thinking about, if you'd love to share with us, what is an example for you of an authentic statement that maybe you went through or you told yourself when you were at that age that worked for you?
Yeah, so this is going to sound super morbid, but it's where I was. So when I would think about the end of my life, I felt relief about that because, and I only realized this later, I saw that my problems would actually come to an end. I made the mistake of thinking it would come to an end with the end of my life, and I clearly see the ignorance of that. But I started with, wait, my problems won't last forever. That was where they won't last forever. Maybe I have different problems or bigger problems. So there was that. But then it grew from them, and I was like, this is also interesting, which is that I think I have to have, like, this perfect body or be this perfect athlete or this perfect student or be, like, GQ good-looking in order to, you know, attract a really beautiful girlfriend or partner. And then I saw other people in the world that, you know, weren't even as good-looking as I was. And I thought I was horrible-looking. You know, and they weren't even doing as well in school as I was, or they weren't even as good athletes as I was. And they had really wonderful, brilliant, beautiful girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever. And so then I realized, wow, it's got to be something else going on here. What is it that makes it? And it was just confidence. I thought, wow, they're confident, or they're really passionate about this one thing. And the more I started leaning into just, I guess, those kinds of thoughts, the kinds of thoughts that I wasn't used to thinking, but I only began thinking because I was focusing on trying to feel better, I realized that those thoughts and those stories would grow bigger and better and more blissful in lots of ways, and then it would sort of take on a life of their own. And then before long, I thought, well, I can be confident, and I can focus on my charisma. That's something I can control. I might never be controlled of how tall I am or, you know, necessarily how good-looking I am, but if confidence matters more than anything else, or charisma matters more than anything else, or, you know, being passionate and purpose-driven is really attractive to someone, then maybe it doesn't matter if I have the perfect body or if I'm the greatest athlete. Maybe I can still have the life I want and I just need to take a different path. So it was those kinds of thoughts that I began leaning into at first, which was like, maybe it was downward comparison, one way to put it, but it was basically just looking for something to appreciate and something to love no matter where I looked.
Yes, thanks for sharing that. I think a lot of people will be able to connect to that. And I think you nailed it. It is definitely confidence, self-confidence, and is such a big topic in itself. And really encouraging parents and teens to have kids, right, in their teens, or even their young adults, jot down what are the top three things that you love about yourself. Not the parent writing them down, but the kid writing them down. But guess what? I want to challenge parents to maybe write it down themselves, and they can do this as an exercise together. So I really love that you mentioned that. So what would be, when we come back, we'll talk about further about this topic a little bit more, because I want to really hear your thoughts. But we do need to go into another break. This is KHTS FM 98.1 AM 1220 and hometownstation.com. See you in a bit. Welcome back to the Dr. Regine Show on the Teen Hour. I have a great guest, Robert Mack, and we are here talking about self-love and how to help teens feel happier. We have talked about so many amazing topics, from how to boost your happiness, helping kids deal with increasing their self-confidence. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
So, Rob, we were talking about some really important topics. We ended it last time with confidence, and really how to help teens feel more confident with their body, and really helping also parents with tools to help their teens boost that confidence and happiness, which was really around parents allowing kids to have control over their minds, having control over what they say, having control over their ideas, which helps them feel better. It does. I really believe that it also boosts confidence and happiness. On that note, I would really love to talk to you, since you are also a relationship expert, to really talk about teen conflict relationships. I think this is such also a big topic, and it wraps it really well with the whole topic around self-love and happiness in general, because that does cause a great stress and is a seed for unhappiness in teens, and how to deal with conflict, right? Because it's an all or no, all or nothing thinking. Just, you know, maybe even from your own experience or what you've seen also with your coaching clients, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, a couple things. Certainly, you know, I think we can set a good example in the household, like at home, for conflict resolution and sort of like conflict resolution skills, just by allowing our kids and teenagers to see us sort of navigate conflict or difficult conversations or difficult people in ways that are effective and sometimes not effective, right? I mean, it's extraordinarily helpful. And part of that is helping kids, you know, and allowing them a glimpse into our experience of emotional regulation. You know, the conversation we're really having here is one around emotional regulation, and we're talking about it from different angles. But probably the most important skill we could learn as adults, and certainly as teenagers or as kids, is emotional regulation. And, you know, it's the ability to sort to simply regulate your emotion regardless of what's going on around you and regardless of what other people are or aren't thinking, saying, or doing. And that takes some real practice, and it is a real skill, and it is a real art. So letting your kids see you sort of like work your way back up the emotional scale when you've had a tough moment, when your peace has been disturbed, when you feel very frustrated or angry, and being honest about that and saying, hey, Mom's feeling real frustrated right now. Dad's really angry right now. And I'm going to work on, you know, moving back up the emotional scale, so to speak. I'm going to work on feeling better. And so Dad just needs a few moments, or Mom just needs a couple minutes, or, you know, Mom's going to go for a walk or whatever. But letting them see you successfully and effectively make your way back up the emotional scale is extraordinarily helpful, you know, in a very transparent way. that allows them to sort of, you know, plant a seed with them. So there's that. And then second, as part of that, it's like letting them, you know, also see you disagree with someone without being disagreeable. Like, you know, we've, I think, lost often, it seems like a lot art form, this ability to disagree with someone without being disagreeable. It's like I can have really strong opinions. I can hold them very lightly. You know, and I also don't need you to co-sign or approve of or believe in or agree with my opinions or beliefs in order for me to hold them. You know, and I don't need to be upset with you. I don't need to treat you differently because of that. So I can sort of stand firm and strong in what I think and feel and believe, and I can be open to hearing your side, you know, as well. And I can have a very rich and open and honest and still loving conversation with you, and we can walk away and still be okay. So I think we can teach a lot of these things just by, you know, the conversations we have with them directly when they're being difficult, right? By continuing to emotionally regulate ourselves, to remain cognitively agile, to reflect back what you heard in your own words without judgment, validate, normalize, empathize, confirm you understood, and then occasionally put a positive reframe on what they've said or what you've said, and then at some point maybe agree to disagree, and then love the person anyway. So we can do that with our kids, we can do that with our partners or with our exes. It's not always easy, and you don't have to do it all the time. And the one thing I want to really remind us all of is that, you know, look, no kid gets out of childhood unscathed. Mm-hmm. You know, our job as adults and is not to escape all of the problems in life or the world. And I think often as parents, we think that we're almost, we consider ourselves almost too relevant. Like parents are like a little less relevant than they often think they are. You know, the kids, friends and peer groups also matters. So it's not about getting it perfect. It's just about doing your best to regulate your emotions, stay cognitively agile, try to be non-judgmental and unconditional as you listen, you know, reflect back what you heard, try not to impose your own thoughts and opinions on other people, particularly your kids, and try to have a conversation with them, you know, in a way that's respectful, and feel free to, you know, sort of disagree without being disagreeable. So those are all like little tips and tricks that you want to begin to weave in to all conversations you have, but especially those that you have with or about your kids.
Yes, I think it's so true that definitely kids are constantly watching us. They're watching how we behave, you know, how we react to certain situations. I always say that kids are like Play-Doh, you know, like it's what we mold them and what they see. And oftentimes, I don't know if you've seen this study where I can't remember who did the study, but it was the kids watching kids, how they were emulating parents' behavior. And parents were asked what that reminded them of. And a lot of times parents would say, oh, wow, that reminds me, or they sound like me. And also in therapy and in coaching, we do use this technique where we kind of like ask the kids, well, can you practice and be mom today? And then can you practice and be dad today? And it's so amazing how they copy to the T, the voice, the tone, the reaction. So I think it's a great reminder for parents to remember that our kids are constantly watching us. And if we expect them, and I think this is part of what you were saying also, is if we expect them to have positive behavior and feel good and resolve a conflict in a positive way, we are the first role models in how they see conflict resolved. So just like a nice reminder, and it's so hard because a lot of times parents will say, well, it's what I'm feeling in that moment, and I just feel reactive to react in XYZ way. And it's so hard to remind myself. And I often use, I tell parents, well, why don't you guys use a word that you use together? Let's say you say broccoli. So the kid will say broccoli when they see the parent getting upset or they don't like how the parent is reacting, as a cue or as a reminder to help them work together on that conflict. Or even with couples and relationships, if you know that your other partner is going to be explosive in a situation and you know this is a problem, is agreeing in advance on what you're going to do. So I really love that you brought that up as well, because I think it's so important in helping them resolve conflict in the home, within themselves, and really working through a lot of those emotions.
I love that practice. It's like a safe word.
Yes.
Kind of a safe word, right? It's beautiful and wonderful. And you're right. You bring up something else, which is like really important, which is, you know, if nothing else, keeping part of your attention as a parent as often as you can, or just as a person, keep part of your attention always inside you on this emotional scale. So you know where you're at on this emotional scale from 0 to 10. If you're at a 4 or 5, it's okay. You start to get to the 5, 6, 7, that's the time to intervene on your own behalf and, you know, down-regulate. In other words, try to find peace again. Do you need a little mindfulness break? Do you need to take what I call micro-meditation? Micro-meditation is just one breath that you take sincerely and consciously for joy's sake alone. So you breathe into your nose and out through your mouth from the stomach. You do it only to enjoy it, not to get good at it. And you let all of your thoughts go, whatever it is that you're thinking at the time, you let them all go. And you pretend like it's the last moment and last breath you'll ever have on this planet. And if you could do that consistently throughout the day, even if you were feeling good already, but especially if your emotions are starting to get the best of you, you'll find that you'll begin to reprogram your brain to have a much more peaceful experience of life, more easily and effortlessly. And so yeah, you want to practice this sort of emotional regulation thing. If you can have a safe word or something like that, if your kid uses to remind you that peace is priceless and that peace matters and that peace is also productive, that's extraordinarily helpful. But you can also use all kinds of other things, triggers. I used to use a practice when I walked through a doorway, or practice a micro-meditation, or if I opened a door, closed a door, that was a reminder for me to practice peace on the inside.
I love that.
Yeah, these are all great tools.
Yes. So can't believe we are almost off. It's amazing. I mean, time flew by today. Rob, I would love for people to know where they can find you on your social media channel, your book on Amazon, really quick, where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me at my website at CoachRobMack.com. You can find me on all social media platforms, most consistently Instagram at RobMackOfficial, and you can find both my books, Happiness from the Inside Out and Love from the Inside Out, everywhere great books are sold, including Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rob. It was wonderful having you. Thank you to all our listeners for joining in today on the first episode of the Dr. Regine Show, sponsored by the Teen Insight Hour on KHTS FM 98.1, AM 1220, and hometownstation.com. See you next time.